I'm David Snow, a partner at PrivCap Media. And today we're joined by Sean Cunningham of GTCR and Adam Lohr and Jamie Hendershot, both of RSM. Gentlemen, welcome to a PrivCap podcast today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, David.
Today we're talking all about deal making in the life sciences space. Obviously, it's a very hot sector right now, and there's a lot of private capital going into life sciences. And of course, there's quite a lot of activity on the public markets. All of you either invest in or advise people who invest in life sciences. So I'm fascinated to hear what you have to say about what's going on right now in that market. Maybe a first question thrown over to Sean from GTCR. Sean, there's news headlines now that say that 2021 is a roaring start for life sciences IPO. So why don't we start there? What's behind all the activity both last year and clearly this year as well?
First of all, you're right. Last year was a pretty extraordinary year in terms of overall equity capital markets activity. And this year has started even stronger, both with regular way IPOs, SPAC activity, and other ECM activities. The world's changed a lot over the last few years. The public market bid has started to exceed the private market bid, especially in life sciences, as you say. And I think it's a combination of a couple of primary factors. Number one, there is a lot of stimulus in general. Monetary supply is up and the cost of money is down. And number two, there's no question that this pandemic has drawn a lot of public market investors to the life sciences space, both looking for biologic drugs as well as cell and gene therapy opportunities, along with new innovations in diagnostics as well.
Adam, what's your perspective on what's behind the boom in IPOs both last year and this year?
So I think I definitely agree with what Sean had mentioned with monetary policy and the general outlook for the economy driving a lot of attention into life sciences. There's a much higher level of comfort with life science that there maybe wasn't before. Everybody over the last 12 months has become some level of an expert related to biotechnology and pharmaceuticals in ways that we never had been before. I mean, we've already seen, I think it's about 100 IPOs over the last 12 months, and I don't really think that's going to slow down in the near future here.
Jamie Hendershot from RSM, what's your perspective?
The drive there to get that liquidity that they can then take that, reinvest it, and continue to grow. They're really looking for that innovation using the capital markets and liquidity exposure there from being public as a way to acquire new technologies and then continue to grow their pipeline, grow their portfolio into new therapeutic areas that they might not already be a part of.
I would imagine that the robust activity on the public markets is both a challenge and an opportunity. On the one hand, if you have life sciences companies to sell or that need to get to their next stage of growth, the public markets represent a great opportunity. On the other hand, you find yourself competing with the public markets.
It is a competitive market. Purchase multiples are elevated by historical standards. But for us at GTCR, what we've typically done is tried very hard to burrow into these industries, to shake every tree, turn over every rock, and especially spend a significant amount of time with management teams in these industries, getting to know them, getting to know their businesses well in advance of any process, and trying to demonstrate to them that we may bring unique perspective and unique value that a public market investor may not.
So a lot of our clients have been excited and hesitant about all of the options that really are in front of them. You know, we've seen a huge pickup over the last 3 years and the number of strategic opportunities to be acquired, in addition to very strong IPO markets, and also the emergence of SPAC in the last year. And so they're really looking for what is that good fit.
We've still seen clients walk away from deals where stuff's been uncovered during diligence and they didn't think it was a good fit for them.
For the companies that you're talking to about potentially taking an investment from GTCR, what stage of growth are they at?
The last 5 years for us, because we're not venture investors, we're looking to partner with management teams that have proven technologies, who maybe have not found exactly how to scale those technologies. They may not have the infrastructure to produce. They may not have the commercial scale to reach the markets they want to reach into. So often we're taking a good technology or good product with a really great management team and helping them reach customers.
Jamie or Adam, for the companies that you're aware of that are either looking for private capital or perhaps considering doing something in the public markets, what do they need to do with the money? And has that changed?
For us, when we work with clients and thinking about how to deploy the capital they have and what to do when they're going out looking for more, it still is always keeping the science core and figuring out how to outsource and decentralize kind of that non-core function. We've seen a huge uptick in the amount of outsourced finance and IT, even moving to outsourcing significant portions of the research or production where that makes sense. Clinical trials also another area where we're continue to see outsourcing. We always make the joke that it could be four guys in a molecule and the company's worth $1 billion. And it's because they've outsourced so much of the business that that's really where they're deploying capital.
Four guys in a molecule. I'd like to see that on a presentation deck. That would be really enticing. Jamie, perspective on what the capital is for these days?
We've had both people looking to inbound or outbound to grow their top line through geographic expansion. People looking to get product innovation. We've seen, you know, generic pharmaceuticals looking for that drugs coming off brand to grow their pipeline there and be able to be the first to file and put them in a competitive position there. Sean, as you're looking at investments, how have the emergence of SPACs impacted the competitive landscape for you as you're looking at companies?
This SPAC trend over the last 6 months has been pretty extraordinary. But I think if you're selling a business, the first decision you need to make is whether you think taking public capital, whether it's regular way IPO or SPAC capital, I'm sure the sellers are thinking a little bit about a SPAC alternative. It would be hard for them not to these days.
One thing we've noticed in looking at both the private equity and the VC data over the last 18 months is, I would call it a reflection of the K-shaped recovery that we're seeing in the broader economy, where there are some companies that are being very successful and following a rapid expansion through the recession. When I look at the deal sizes, I saw that about 75% of the PE and VC investment is really these smaller amounts, call it under $20 million. And they're, you know, multiple stages in, sometimes in excess of, you know, the seventh or eighth round of financing. And then a very small percentage, call it 15%, are on that high upper K where they're upwards of $200 million. And so I'm curious, from your perspective, do you see a risk for any of the startup companies in this space that they won't be able to get maybe those smaller amounts of financing to move them through their development cycle?
Well, Adam, it's a good question. In 2020, one of the things that we were very concerned about, whether it was a platform acquisition or whether it was a smaller tuck-in acquisition, was whether small businesses had the infrastructure to be able to operate work from home or remotely. We looked at a number of businesses where we were concerned whether they simply had the resources, the scale, the technology, the infrastructure.
I would imagine that many of these life sciences companies do care who their partner is. There's getting capital, and then there's getting capital attached to a group of people who can help you move to your next stage of growth.
You know, particularly if you're looking at a biotech that's emerging, they need to get their product to market and get it to the patient. And I think, you know, some of the, whether it's private equity or large pharmaceutical partners, you know, I think it's just about getting that to market.
Choosing your capital partner is critical for these companies who are emerging and looking to bring technologies to market. Historically, the public markets have not been as patient as private capital. And so whether or not you're going to issue public equity via an IPO or a SPAC, you have to be pretty confident that you're not going to stumble.
A lot of the companies we're talking with, they're incredibly focused on having a partner that truly has, you know, gone all the way, either through their IPO or getting something through FDA approval multiple times, because over the next several years, they're anticipating that the rate at which approvals are granted is probably going to slow slightly from what we saw under the Trump administration. As much experience as somebody can bring to the table, that's going to be very, very helpful.
Sean, your firm, GTCR, invests both in drug discovery companies and companies that provide services and tools to the huge population of companies that are developing drugs. What are you feeling better about these days?
When we look at the products themselves, whether it's a therapeutic product or a diagnostic product, usually the considerations are very idiosyncratic to that product or that diagnostic, that therapeutic area. So it's a bit hard to paint with a broad brush when you're looking at the products themselves. On the tools side, it's a little bit different. I would say today, we do find that to be a fairly attractive market, in part because there are so many entrepreneurs and companies developing technologies in the life sciences area. The public markets and private capital sources are funding many, many businesses looking for breakthrough therapies and diagnostics. And so if you can provide the proverbial picks and axes and blue jeans to those many, many drug, therapeutic, and diagnostic developers, I think that's can be a pretty interesting private equity play. That being said, this is clearly an area where you need really good domain expertise and great management partners. It can be dangerous to wade into life science tools and diagnostics if you don't know what you're doing.
Clearly, the hunt for a vaccine has drawn a lot of public attention to the biotech business and drug development generally. But for you three insiders, you know, what are the lessons that you've taken about the capabilities and sort of the commercial future of life sciences through the COVID crisis? Maybe starting with Adam.
So I think the one thing we've learned and I think there's a greater appreciation for within the industry is while an mRNA vaccine was able to come to market in a matter of months, that was built on the shoulders of 20 years of research before it. It's a very methodical industry. It's very, very heavily regulated. And so it is by its nature, risk adverse. But what we've seen with COVID is that when capital, and that's, you know, a lot of capital being deployed from the government is available and regulations are laxed and partnerships, both domestically and internationally are forged, it's truly amazing what can be accomplished. The question will become, is there appetite for speed without sacrificing efficacy or safety?
Necessity is the mother of all invention. And we have seen the art of the possible when businesses and government work together and work quickly to address a global health challenge. There's no question the pace of change has quickened in life science tools in biopharma areas. I think there will be many things taken from COVID that hopefully will become permanent fixtures of the biopharma and broader healthcare industry.
I think a lot of us didn't realize working from home was going to be as effective and productive as it's been today. But even with some of the clinical studies, the follow-ons from the COVID vaccine, you know, people are taking, you know, samples from home and sending it back to the pharmaceutical companies just to understand efficacy with the different variants that are out there and reinfection rates, those types of things. I mean, that type of study is being done remotely. You know, that was something I didn't fully think was possible.
We have companies that are doing virtual digital clinical trials based on wearable technology that didn't used to happen. And it's being reimbursed in some respects by government because the regulations for at-home care and virtual care during the pandemic have been eased. And so you're seeing truly a merging of ecosystems that I think is very, very exciting for everyone.
So I think clinical trials will be more efficient. They'll be quicker. They'll probably be less expensive. And again, I think that's something that will be an improvement coming out of COVID.
There's really two issues you normally deal with clinicals is finding the right population and then having that population continue to stay enrolled for the entire trial. And we know that people dropping out of the trial is the number one reason the trials fail. So if we're able to deploy new techniques and technologies to find a broader cross-section of the population, to to make sure that the trial is as robust as possible and we can keep those people engaged, you know, when they don't have to go to a clinical site that on average is more than 2 hours away from their home. It really increases the success rate for the trials just from a pure mathematics perspective.
Jamie, what makes you excited about being part of the life sciences industry over the next 5 to 10 years?
I think there's tremendous amount of activity going on, and it's just exciting to be a part of this like emerging technology and seeing that the deals you're a part of, how that therapy can get put into patients' hands and have potentially successful outcomes for everybody.
I'd say it's the ability for the industry to provide better, broader patient care and results. I'm amazed at the rate of play. And I think we're going to do some terrific things for the health and safety of the community.
The pace of innovation is going to accelerate tremendously over the next 5 to 10 years. And I think the diagnostic and life science tools industries are going to be a huge part of improving lives. I think the innovation is going to surprise all of us. And so we're very, very excited to partner with great management teams, which is what we've been doing for 40 years, find interesting businesses, and try to help those teams accelerate the growth in those businesses.
Great. Well, clearly the next guest we need to have on this podcast is Four Guys and a, what was it? Four Guys and a Molecule?
Four Guys and a Molecule.
But for now, I'd like to say a big thank you to Jamie Hendershot and Adam Lohr of RSM, Sean Cunningham of GTCR. Thanks so much for being part of a PrivCap podcast, and we hope to have you back in the future.
Like what you hear on the PrivCap podcast? Visit PrivCap.com for more thought leadership interviews, articles, reports, webinars, and more.